Okay. I want to thank, first of all, Vita, who isn't here right now, but Vita had the idea to have the whole foundation present, because they do lots of cool stuff on community. And of course they have the camp up in Oregon that some of us know about. And I'm just so incredibly pleased. And Marge, I don't have a biography for you, so I'll leave you to talk about exactly what your position is and what you do at the Hull Foundation. But I know you're involved in a ton of community calls and a ton of stuff that goes on there. So I'm going to turn it over to Marge Byers. Thank you so much for being here.
Great. Thank you so much, Andrea. A little bit about me and how I landed where I am currently. Marge Byers, I was born and raised, still being raised, in Salem, Oregon. So I'm very much a hometown girl, and grew up, I'm sure that I was born legally blind. My parents didn't figure that out until I was almost 5 years old and couldn't see a 3-foot salmon in front of my face looking at a fish ladder up on the Columbia River Gorge. They could only correct me to low vision. And at 9, my ophthalmologist figured out that my lenses were not only dislocating, they were becoming detached. And at that point said, she's probably going to be a blind adult. And he was correct, but nothing was done preemptively. So I basically was raised low vision, with not much of any kind of accommodation for me, and became legally blind again in my early 20s. Had surgery to remove those pesky little lenses that were almost completely detached at that point. My left eye, when I went in to see my ophthalmologist before the surgery, what can you see down at the end of that hall? Remember the 20-foot hallway? It was those days. And I said, I know the biggie is down there somewhere, but I'm having trouble seeing where the light is. So I've had bare light perception. The amazing thing is I had those pesky little lenses taken out and was able to wear contacts, which they didn't think I would be able to do because of the shape of my corneas. And it gave me 20/20 vision in both eyes. That was never supposed to happen for me. So I thought I just walked away scot-free. Wrong answer. Because I have Marfan syndrome, it's a connective tissue disease. I've experienced a detached retina, and that was before I became legally blind in 2010, when I found out I can no longer wear the contacts that gave me that 20/20 vision. And in the glasses that I wear, that put me at still correctable to about 20/25, but it put me at 20 degrees field. And I have less than that now. We don't know why it's going away. It's going away, and I am not spending any time or energy worrying about why it's going away, because living life is too important. So how, where, why, don't care. Let's just get on with it. That's my own personal opinion. In 2000, and I became blind this time, literally walked in the doctor's office, fully sighted. I drove to the office, walked out legally blind and no longer driving, had to call my niece to come and get me, and spent, like many of us do, over a year kind of frozen at home, not willing to go out, being afraid to take that white cane up and walk out my door. Finally did it, walked into a blind skills support group at one point in 2011. Blind Skills is a nonprofit based in Salem, Oregon, founded by Carol McCarl, who is a blind teacher of visually impaired at the Oregon School for the Blind. Happened to be Kim Charlson's first teacher at the Oregon School for the Blind. Kim, after her first week at school, went to her mom and said, "You've got to get me a different teacher. This one's really mean." But Carol had high expectations, and Kim clearly lived up to and way exceeded what Carol had hoped to see Kim Charlson do in her lifetime. And they remained friends as long as Carol was alive. Working in, eventually I became an employee in the Blind Skills office, and working with the Commission for the Blind, they would send out brochures for the Hull Park, for the retreats. People who've grown up blind know about Hall Park. It's one of the limited programs that are available throughout the country for blind adults to go and have recreational opportunities that they would not normally have. When I would see the brochures, I kind of just disregarded them. The retreats were really expensive and beyond my financial capability. In 2000, and I believe it was 13, they had a come and get to know the park, kind of a one day fun day thing. And some of us from Salem went up to the park. We had a barbecue, got to see the 22 plus acre park. It's absolutely beautiful. It's basically in the foothills around Mount Hood. The property on the other side of Hall Park is Mount Hood National Forest. Absolutely gorgeous property, beautiful facility. Was really enjoying it. It was the first time I got to meet other people in the blind community around Oregon, and I was really enjoying it. Well, they had gone to a lot of trouble to do a promotional video, and I was so busy talking to one of the other attendees who happened to be from Gresham, Oregon. We got in trouble. The teacher yelled at us because the video had started and we were so engaged in our conversation. What I wanted to do was grab him by the wrist and say, let's go outside and talk some more because we were having such a great conversation. What's really funny to me, and it makes me laugh, is I just did a little bit of Zoom hopping. I got off of one of our Hall Zoom calls to come on to this call. And Clark, the said cohort with me that got into trouble, happened to be on the call. And I said, Clark, do you mind if I tell that story? And he said, as long as you don't mention me by name. So there you go, Clark. Didn't mention you by name. Holding true to my word. But what was really great for me is it helped me be really enthusiastic about connecting to other people in Oregon, in the blind community. About a year later, I went to Hall Park for a Living with Sight Loss seminar. At that point, I was working in Blind Skills office, and I was promoting Hall Park. And I thought, if I'm promoting their programs, then I really should experience the program so I can tell people from a firsthand experience what it is like. And what I really understood was the ability to be able to be with other people that are particularly those of us who are newer to sight loss. We tend to feel like we're all alone. We tend to feel very, very isolated and very alien in our own world. It's such a hard place to be. And what I really understood is the ability to go and spend 3 days with 7 or 8 other people who are going through the same thing can be absolutely life altering. Another one of the people on the Zoom call that I just got off of, our Zoom call is called How You Doing? How You Dealing? And we're just talking about things in general. And one of the ladies happened to be one of my favorite stories about how transformational the Living with Sight Loss seminars can be. She actually went the first time with her husband. They got to the park. They checked into their room. And her husband said, I'll be back in a little bit, because he drove. So he had to go into Sandy to do some kind of shopping. And left her alone there in the dorm room. And she said that she just curled up on the bed and sobbed. She felt like she was that little girl who had been left alone at the School for the Blind for the first time, completely alone and isolated, and she was emotionally devastated by it. I said, so how did you feel 2 days later at the end of the seminar? And she said, oh my gosh, I was an entirely different person. I wasn't afraid of my white cane anymore. I was proud to be using a white cane. The difference in her feeling of self-worth completely changed in 3 days And I thought, boy, howdy, if you want to talk about bang for your buck, I really feel that our Living with Sight Loss classes, seminars, are one of the greatest things that we do. She was on the call tonight, and I said, Anne, is it okay if I share your story? And she said, honestly, I would be honored if you would share my story. And I said, to me, you are the person that exemplifies. This is why it is terrifying to go someplace brand new with people that you don't know when you are already in a transitional phase in your life, and to be able to come out of it a couple of days later with friends that you may have. And I still, when I went to my Living with Sight Loss seminar, even though I wasn't new to it, there are people that I still communicate with. So there are people I've made connections that are still there, and I think that's very important. So a little bit about Hall Park and how did this happen in the first place. Hall Park is a 22-plus acre park that is just outside of Sandy, Oregon, which is about 45 minutes out of Portland. It's a beautiful park. It's still pretty pristine in its layout. We have a 24-room dormitory. We have a lodge that has a catering kitchen, dining room, big stone fireplace with a bunch of comfy couches, which are way too easy to fall asleep on. I have had a hard time making it through any descriptive audio movies that we've watched because those couches are really comfy. There's an in-ground pool. There's a 10-person hot tub in our dorm. There is a rec hall, a picnic shelter. There is the gazebo is absolutely my favorite place to go on the park because it's up over the Sandy River. I don't know if you can see the river. Don't care because I can hear it. I can smell it. The air is so different when you're around water and you're also in heavy forest. So you can smell and taste the leaves and the evergreens. It's a beautiful, pristine part of the park. And it is right next to the half acre, Gardens of Enchantment. It's a half acre garden. It's full sensory. It is laid out so anybody in any kind of a mobility device, whether it be a wheelchair, scooter, walker, whatever, they're raised beds. So you can touch, you can smell, you can taste, you can hear, and you can see a myriad of different plants. It's a beautiful garden that we are very fortunate to have gardeners from the Portland area who come and maintain the garden for us. The park came into being because Oral Hall, and a lot of you, if you've been blind for very long, you have known us as the Oral Hall Park, and we are now currently known as the Hall Foundation and Learning Center. Oral Hall was the woman who actually, technically, she sold the property to us. It is her family's homestead. The office building that we currently use is the homestead house that was the Hall family house. She and her husband had no children. She was diagnosed with ovarian cancer, and she and her husband had to have a really very serious talk about what are we going to do with this park? We have nobody to give it to. So they happened to go into Sandy, Oregon and talk to a friend of theirs who was a judge and a lawyer and also happened to be blind. What are we going to do with the park? Any suggestions? Having grown up blind, this judge said, well, I went to some camps when I was a kid that were for blind kids. Have you thought about dedicating it to a camp for adults that are blind? So that is the arrangements that they made. And actually, Oral Hall outlived her husband despite her cancer diagnosis. And in 1962, I believe it was, the 22-plus acre park, after she passed away, was sold for $1 for us to now make it what it currently is. even though we have been known largely for the big summer retreats, and you get to do really fun things at the summer retreats. I'm trying to think some of the things they're doing this year. I do believe they are doing a jet boat tour on the Willamette. I've heard that they are doing zip lining, and I believe that happens up on Mount Hood. A lot of the recreational things you go offsite to do. They traditionally will go kayaking on still water. There's also a whitewater rafting trip, very traditionally. Oftentimes they go rock climbing. I'm not sure if that's included this year. One of the things that I know that they're going to be doing is the indoor skydiving thing, which really appeals to me. And I think they're doing that on the moderate adventure. But things that you would not normally think that you would do at a camp for people that are blind. Skydiving is always one of the options I know that they offer during the high adventure camp. One of our book club folks, and she's now a board member, she skydives every year. She absolutely loves to be able to go skydiving. So it offers things that are unique. And as I said, it's a beautiful property. It is very rural. So you often hear coyotes at night. It's a well-known fact that we do see mountain lions sometimes on the property, and bear scat is not uncommon, but it's the woods, so you kind of have to expect that. One of the things that I love about the property is that it is so blind friendly. As far as I've been able to figure out, there are only two steps on the entire property, two stairs. If you have made contact with a carpet, that means there's a door at the other end of that carpet. It's very much set up for people who are blind, lots of braille signage. There's something about that park, and I still think it is because so many people have gone there and had such positive experiences. People like Anne, who had their life transformed by being at the park just 3 days, which just amazes me. And I think all of us who go there have transformative and positive experiences. We leave part of our positive energy there, because I hear it from people all the time. There's something magical about Hull Park, and I don't know what it is. I honestly think it's us. We have less left parts of our magic there at the park. To me, I've always struggled a little bit with the finances of being able to go to retreats and seminars. One of the things that I didn't understand until I started working with the Hull Foundation is if you can't afford to go, there are scholarships available. They will also talk to you about doing payment plans, and they are also very good at helping people get creative for being able to finance. Different groups like Lions groups often will sponsor people to be able to come for seminars. We have had people within Oregon whose Lions groups have not only sponsored the cost of their retreat, but have also provided transportation for people to be able to get there and get home. Because as we all know, transportation is a big piece of, it sounds great, but how am I going to get there and how am I going to get home is always a really big quandary for all of us. During 2020, during COVID, I was still working as Blind Skills executive director. Happened to be talking to Sharon Elder, who was the Hull executive director at the time. And I explained that I was working with the Commission for the Blind doing technology classes because I really felt like I needed a second job to supplement my income. I'm just having trouble making ends meet. And I said, you know, through COVID, everything that's going on, so many people are losing their businesses. People are losing their jobs right and left. Honestly, who is going to want to hire a 62-year-old blind woman after all of this is said and done? And she said, wait, I would hire a 62-year-old blind woman. And that is when I started working for Hall because, as I've said many, many times, COVID stopped and slowed down a whole lot of things in our lives, but it did not slow down sight loss one darn bit. But it also prohibited us from being able to connect with other people in person. And that was a really hard blow for people who are new to sight loss. And one of those things I was very, very aware that this is not a good time to lose your sight. It's never a good time to lose your sight, but it was even more isolating. So in July of 2020, I started working with the Hall Foundation as we were starting to ramp up the Zoom program. Now, our Zoom program, as many people in ACB, if you are on community calls, you know that the Hall Foundation is now doing a number of classes. I think we offer, I counted the other day and I keep forgetting how many, we offer at least 9 different classes on a variety of different things. I think our Zoom program is one of the things that has gotten us more notice in the national community. I think that our group of sight loss instructors who are doing our Zoom calls are all really exceptional people in our own ways. It's amazing the group of talent that we've been able to collect. And I'm really proud of our group and what we are presenting. And the greatest part to me of Zoom is the ability to connect with people all over the country. Todd Falstrom, who is our newest sight loss instructor, is in Bozeman, Montana. The rest of us are in Oregon at this point. And when I had contacted Todd and said, what do you think about maybe being one of our sight loss instructors? Because it shouldn't matter where you are. It's much more important what you bring to the table. And after his first call, Todd is now doing a call that is called Independent Solutions A to Z. I highly recommend it, even if you've been blind your entire life. Todd just has been finding resources and information that a lot of us have gone, I've never heard that before. I had the great pleasure of co-facilitating with him on his very first call. And he called me about 15 minutes after we got off the Zoom call. And he said, wow, they're from all over the country. Yeah, Todd, they are. To him, it's like a whole treasure trove. So if you get in on a Hall call and Todd's on there, you're very apt to hear him ask you, where do you hail from? Because to him, it fuels Todd to know that we are touching people in all different corners of the country. And it's one of the things that I think is so valuable. I absolutely love doing the Zoom calls that we do. Hall does 2 Zoom calls that sometimes we refer to them as Hall only. And tonight's call was one of those. It's not exclusive to Hall. It's just that we do not carry them on ACB community calls because it's just too redundant. How you doing? How you dealing? Is just a basic support group call. Is it just Oregon? No, not at all. Because tonight we had Southern California and New Mexico. We're very apt to get folks from Texas, Arizona, Oklahoma. It doesn't matter where you are. It's just we don't list it on community calls because it's redundant. We also have a book club. We call it Reading in the Dark. And once again, we have people from all over the place that join us for Reading in the Dark. But holy cow, if you look at ACB community call, there are a lot of book clubs. So we just really didn't see the point. Anything that Hall is putting out there, we really try to make sure that it is different than some of the other calls that are available. We just started in March a new call that we are calling Travel from Home and Beyond. I'm doing it. It's actually going to be myself along with Tina Christian and Todd Falstrom. Tina does a lot of the in-person events, so a lot of times there are going to be months she's going to be doing in-person events and not available. So Todd will fill in when she isn't available. I wasn't really interested in doing travel. I am a poor person. I can't afford to travel. But the more that we talked about travel, the more I went, travel, that's a much more broad term. Because honestly, anytime we head outside of our homes, it's traveling. And it's going to take some planning, whether it's just going to the grocery store or whether you're going across the country, you're going to have to do some planning. So then I started getting a lot more interested and excited about doing this call. When we did our first call and we asked, what do you all want to hear about? And a lot of people, that's what they want to talk about. It's the minutia of traveling. Lots of questions about orientation and mobility, particularly as we get older. When you have one hand already tied up with a cane or a dog and you're trying to get through an airport and you're trying to juggle so many things, how do you juggle? Just so many things. I'm really excited about the travel call. I think it's going to be really fun. So you will get everything from destinations and how to get there to just orientation and mobility, how to work on things like balance that affect a lot of us as we get older, and particularly those of us who are continuing to lose sight because our vestibular systems are very much tied in with our sight. So the more sight we lose, the more wonky our balance tends to get, whether we know that or not. One of the other things that Hall Foundation offers that a lot of people are not aware of is one-on-one time with a sight loss instructor. If you are on a call and one of our sight loss instructors says something that really strikes a chord with you and you'd like to have further conversation, you are more than welcome to call the office and say, I would love to talk to Teresa or Todd or Marja or, you know, Tyann, any of us, to get some more information. And that may include, for example, Tyann is incredible with fiber arts, crafts. If you want more information about crocheting, Tyann would be more than happy to talk to you. Tyann's also great on helping people with technology, iPhone, iPad, that kind of navigation. So that one-on-one time is not going to cost you anything. Zoom calls don't cost you anything. The only thing really that is going to cost you anything at the Hall Foundation is if you come for retreats. But we can also help you figure out ways to help sponsor you so you don't have to do the full cost of it. Are there questions about Hall Foundation?
Okay, and I'm going to ask everyone to please stay muted till I call on you. We had some little hiccups during the first meeting, so I would really appreciate if you guys stay muted. We are recording, so please put your hands up if you have a question for Marja.
And that can be anything from the Zoom calls that we do to in-person events, our history, and the one-on-one referral things that we do. There are also, if you happen to be in the Northwest area, we do also offer things like low vision assessments, and that's an in-person at the park service that we offer. That can be, well, and we get donations of things like CCTVs, different types of magnifiers that we get donated, and we rehome that equipment as much as we can, because those of us who have fading vision know that things like magnifiers can only work so long for us, and then they are not effective anymore. So it's kind of nice to be able to pass those along. So if you don't have any questions, I can certainly talk about some of the things that are coming up. We basically have events every month through the end of the year. And our next event is going to be coming up in May. We have an arts and hobbies seminar that's 6th through the 9th. The theme, Tina, is Tina who is going to be basically running and organizing the seminar. She is an artist. She's blind and has some usable sight. She's a phenomenal artist, actually. She's really good, very creative. She's also a teacher. So if you like playing games, come to a retreat with Tina. She's really good at making games adapted to folks who can't see. So the arts and hobbies this year is going to be themed around around the world. And I know that they're going to be doing some art projects that you can take home with you. Not sure what else they're going to be doing that week. Then in June, they're going to have friends and alumni, and that's a 5-day retreat. They'll be going off campus and doing some fun things. Not sure what all Tina has planned for friends and alum. Haven't heard yet. Then in July, the 14th or the 17th, we have an advanced sight loss seminar, which, it doesn't really matter if you've done the intro or not. It's helpful if you've done the intro to sight loss. But I know one of the things that we were planning to do is cooking a meal together. We're going to be doing cooking lunch together, doing more in-depth things on iPhone, iPad, Android if people have them, but the vast majority of us are iPhone users. So that's usually what we are focusing on. We usually will have an orientation or mobility specialist who comes out and talks with us, and we'll do a little bit more in depth than what we did with the intro earlier this year. Then we only have a 2-day break, and then we go into the moderate adventure retreat. I'm kind of excited about the advanced sight loss retreat because Todd Falstrom, who is our instructor from Montana, had already decided he would come out for moderate adventure. And he has a friend who is also going to be coming to moderate adventure from Minnesota. And they decided as long as they're coming out, they are also going to both do the advanced sight loss seminar. So Todd, who is also he has his master's in vocational rehabilitation counseling and has worked as a VR counselor. He is going to be helping with the advanced sight loss seminar as well as myself. I think it should be really interesting. Then they're going to go right into the moderate adventure retreat, which is 6 days with a 2-day break in between. They're going to be really tired by the time they get home, I guarantee you. Then in August, the 17th or the 23rd is the high adventure retreat. I don't have it in my notes, but in September, we will be doing a, cooking with sight loss seminar. That's going to be a 3-day or a 4-day retreat in September. So a lot more hands-on cooking stuff and talk about how we adapt to do things in the kitchen, once we lose our sight. I had the experience last September of doing a seminar with Tina that we did not have a professional chef to cover. So Tina actually not only led the seminar, she cooked, and I love to be in the kitchen and I love to cook. So I got on Labor Day, I spent time getting my food handler's card. So Tina and I and another lady who's been completely blind for over 30 years, we did all the meal preparation for the seminar for the week. We were really tired, but the food was great and we had a really good time. And it's kind of nice to be able to tell people, yes, blind people can actually cook for a group of people quite successfully. And we live to tell the tale. any questions, I'm hoping, because I'm getting tired of talking to you guys. Come on.
Hold on one second. We do have one question.
Yeah.
Connie, did you have a question? Your hand, I thought your hand went up and then it went down again. Either Connie. It sounds like somebody's trying to unmute. Okay, I guess we don't have any questions. Margie, you can stop at any time. I'd like people to ask questions. I thought somebody was trying to unmute. I'm hearing something. Is somebody unmuting?
Audio not unmuted.
It's Connie.
Okay, Connie, go ahead, honey.
Sorry, I had...
No, you're fine. Your hand just kept... You went up and it went down and I wasn't sure what was going on. So
I didn't know what was going
on
either because I had speech on demand and I forgot to turn it off.
You're good. You're good. Okay, go ahead, sweetie.
Okay. I'm sorry, Marja, what did you say is happening in September? I'm taking notes for a special interest affiliate, so I need to write that down. Oh, what kind of retreat was in September again?
It is a cooking with sight loss.
Oh, wonderful. Okay. I just want to say one quick thing. I love your attitude about sight loss. You know, it's not always pretty, but life goes on. I just love that.
Yeah. And being somebody we don't understand, I do my eye care up at Oregon Health Sciences University. They're used to doing a lot of research. Mm-hmm. And I've talked with enough of their doctors who've said, and a lot of them just say, we don't know. And I finally got into a conversation with an eye alignment doctor who said, you know what? We do see a number of patients and we can't explain why they're losing their sight, but clearly they're losing their sight. And we just don't know. So why take up the energy? Part of my thinking comes from the fact that I have a 36-year-old son who is autistic. And what is the point of pointing fingers? And it was vaccines and it was this, it was that. No, he was born that way. Who cares? This is the way it is. I was grateful for the diagnosis when he finally got it at 3. Thank goodness. Now we know what's going on. Let's just deal with it.
Yeah.
So having years of experience with that before I became blind this time and had to live a blind life. So this is the first time in my life that I've been blind that I've had to really say I am blind. And this is the way that I'm going to live.
Ross has left the meeting.
Do the ophthalmologists know about Hull Foundation? Because that would be wonderful. They could refer their newly blinded patients to
it. Is one of my goals. Actually, I still do work with Blind Skills. I stepped away as their executive director, but am involved in their board and am now facilitating in-person support groups, which we just moved to our local hospital because I know that they can help bridge us with ophthalmologists because that I feel like there's a big separation between the blind community and eye care professionals. I think it's really critical for eye care professionals to understand that they have got to stop saying there's nothing that we can do.
Right. They need to start saying life goes on.
They need to say there's nothing more that I can do, but there are resources and here you go.
Exactly.
So that is a big piece of my own personal goal is to try and get eye care professionals. Hull Foundation has spoken a number of times. They went to a very large meeting of eye care professionals, and what we got out of it were low vision specialists from Kaiser Permanente who said, this can make a difference. So now we do get a lot of referrals from Kaiser Permanente. I want to get my toe in the door of the, we have one retina clinic in Salem. And when I talked to the first time I met a friend of mine, she had just come from the retina specialist whose parting words to her as he started to walk out the door were, oh, by the way, you're not street legal anymore. By that, he meant you are legally blind. You can't drive anymore. That's what he said. You're not street legal anymore. Mm-hmm. And shut the door.
Wow.
That is a really poor way of telling somebody you're legally blind. You can't drive. And her exact words to me were, where do I go from here? Mm-hmm. And I said, it's funny that you would say that because Blind Skills did a recording called Where Do I Go From Here? And it's the stories of five different people who were basically told the same thing that she was. Now what will I do? You know, just there's nothing more that I can do, which sounds like a death sentence.
It does.
And it's, and we all know, everybody that's on this call, we all know that that is far from the truth. Mm-hmm. And there are people like me, the call that I just jumped off from, I have a friend that was on the call, and I have a tagline on my personal email that is, just when the caterpillar thought her world was over, she became a butterfly. Because I have accomplished more as a blind adult than I ever did as a sighted adult. Hmm. And when I said that to my little friend Maria, she pulled up her shirt sleeve and showed me the blue butterfly tattooed on her forearm. She said, that's exactly what this is. I have bloomed as a blind person, that I've become an adult that I never thought I was capable of being until I became blind. I don't know why it brings out the advocacy in us, but it certainly does. As a sighted adult, I never would have dreamt of going to Washington, D.C. and talking to lawmakers. But I've done it three times through American Council of the Blind and our legislative seminar. Going by myself is one thing, but going along with four other people who are way more blind than me and tromping around Capitol Hill seemed like it should be an impossible goal. But it's very possible. You just need the supports and the confidence to say, yeah, this is doable. It's okay to get on that plane and go with all your other blind friends. And it is perfectly okay to say, you know, I'm having a little trouble. Can you help me out? Give me a little support. Blindness has, for me, has been quite a journey and quite an education. And I love one of my favorite calls that I do on the Hall Foundation is tell us your story. And I would welcome every one of you to come on to tell us your story. It's the first Wednesday of the month. And it's literally telling us your story. Where did you come from? What's your background? And it's not just about sight loss. It's about your story because everybody has a very unique story. They're all, to me, interesting, amazing. It helps me understand where people come from. And I think the more that we understand about other people and where they are in life and where they're coming from makes us much more tolerant people. And I think it just helps us to build a better world. I was really delighted. Oregon State Convention a couple of years ago, we had Janet Dickelman as our keynote speaker. And basically, she told us her story. I had no idea. I had no idea how she got started planning conventions. She's the convention queen. She's been the convention queen. I started in ACB in 2011. And she's always been the convention queen. And to hear that it was just kind of happenstance, I can't do it. So Janet, can you take the ball and run with it? You're doing a great job. Keep it up. I was absolutely delighted to hear Janet's story. I never would have guessed.
The first year that I attended ACB convention in person, she helped me register because they have people that'll help you.
Yeah.
You know, that'll walk you through that. And my ex-husband was not a techie person, and it was just kind of overwhelming to sign up for that. Now I can do it with, you know, not too much trouble. But there were so many abbreviations and things I wasn't clear about, and how much do I sign up for, and am I overscheduling? And she helpful, and she wasn't the chair yet. I think Carla was still the chair when I first went. But very quickly, within 2 or 3 years, Janet became the chair, and I was program chair for BITS for a while, so I dealt with her quite a bit, and she's a lovely, and 1 year she broke her arm right before convention. She could only type with one hand, and she was just in there doing it. I mean, she just said, you know, we're just going to get through it the best we can, and she's just a wonderful, wonderful lady.
And if you've never had the opportunity to talk with Janet, she is just absolutely one of the most down-to-earth people. I adore her. She's such a great lady. And I loved hearing her story. I was just, you know, sometimes we see people who we think are, I look at Janet in kind of a power position. I mean, she's the one, she is the convention queen. And if you talk to Janet, she doesn't see herself that way at all. She's just Janet. It's what an opportunity to be able to talk to different people in different positions. Yeah, I love Tell Us Your Story. I have heard absolutely. And honestly, we have had other sight loss instructors from the Hull Foundation. Tyann, particularly, I did not know Tyann's story until she came on to Tell Us Your Story. I did not realize that she was basically an abandoned Korean orphan, and that's how she came to the United States. I had no idea. It's like, wow, really? Just, boy, howdy. We have heard such amazing stories. And what I find, one of the universal things that I found in Tell Us Your Story, nobody thinks that they have a very interesting or unique story. And absolutely, that is not true of anybody who's come and told us their story. Deanna Noriega is gradually telling us her story because, oh my word, that lady has had an amazing life. So we've got her up to college. So she keeps coming back periodically and filling us. And Job Corps next. We're going to hear about her Job Corps experience.
She should write a book. She really should. She's had such an amazing life.
She's written several books.
Oh,
yeah.
Well, I know, but specifically about herself. Oh, I don't know that she's written.
Seriously, it's
she's
like.
She's amazing.
Yeah, it's like we just got her through college. And incredible. Absolutely incredible.
She wrote a story for one of the writers group had a quarterly magazine through ACB. It was I'm trying to think of the name of it. I don't remember. Where they occasionally would release a publication that was a compilation of stories that had been written by members. She wrote this fascinating story about starting at the School for the Blind. You were talking earlier about someone, you know, being there by themselves, and she was quite young and, basically being, you know, put there. And, having to figure out how to make her way, and it, very, very interesting. Just a fascinating person, Deanna.
Yeah. Well, and that to me is the point that I've made to a lot of people is Deanna has an absolutely fascinating story, but most of us do, whether we think we do or not. We are all unique individuals and we have stories to tell. I see Christy's got her hand up.
Could you send the information so that we can disseminate? You know, you're talking about cooking. I have a client who is in her sighted life has been a chef. And You know, she's kind of not, she thinks, oh, maybe I can just volunteer and I'll just pay things forward. But she's young. And I would love to see her do something like what you're talking about. I think that would just send her to the moon and to cloud nine. So I would love to be able to share the information about blind skills and about a whole foundation. So if there's any way we can disseminate that on the convention list, I would greatly appreciate it. Thank you.
Absolutely.
You can send anything to me, Marge. I'll make sure it gets out.
Yep, and I will.
You've got my email address now. So you can send to me, and I will put it out there. We have an announce list this year, which is great. Oh, Christy, I'm sorry. I did not see your hand.
That's okay.
I apologize. Thank you for speaking up. I appreciate it.
Well, and cooking particularly, a lot of us tend to have and I think it's because I did have 20/20 vision using contacts, but when I got home, I took my contacts out and that put me legally blind, even though I didn't understand that at the time. So I've been cooking legally blind pretty much my whole adult life. But a lot of people, as they lose sight, think that they can't cook anymore, mm-hmm. which is absolutely the furthest thing from the truth. And if you get around other food geeks, oh my gosh, we are really obsessive about figuring out ways that you can work in the kitchen. Things that do work for us. And I often think of Christine Ha, who mm-hmm. won, I think it was season 7 of Master Chef, who is blind, and it's her blindness is actually kind of unusual. The condition that she has, most people will clear up, and for her, it did not. And I remember her talking about the first time she went into the kitchen. She grew up cooking with her Vietnamese grandma and knew all of her grandma's recipes. She loved to be in the kitchen. After she became blind, she went into the kitchen, decided she was going to make herself a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. She got jelly all over the counter and stood there and sobbed mm-hmm. and said, I'm never going to be able to cook. And I vividly remember to this day the episode of Master Chef where they were doing sushi. She had help getting out onto the cooking floor, but after that, she was on her own. She had to mm-hmm. do it herself. And she cut and plated sushi better than any of the sighted contestants, just by feel. And I watched her do that, and I just thought, oh, don't tell me that blind people can't cook. I mean, she's just, but it's very easy for, and I've even heard rehab teachers who are like, I don't think it's a good idea to use a chef's knife.
Mm-hmm.
Don't tell me I shouldn't go into the kitchen. That's, we don't need to be hearing that. But when you have the opportunity, Tina, like I said, Tina cooked for that entire seminar. She did the meal planning, the menu planning, and, I helped do some of the prep and serving, but she did the cooking. Our friend Laura, who helped us cook, she's a phenomenal cook. And being able to be around people who are used to being in the kitchen and cooking blind is such a freeing. You have to set your mind free. You can do it, but you've got to be able to unleash your mind and say, this is an okay thing to do. It's not that scary. Barbecuing. I've done whole Zoom classes on blind people working on grills. And there's a lot of different things you can do working on a grill. Just because you're blind doesn't mean you can't do it. You have to do it a little bit differently. That's kind of our theme. You can still do it. You're just going to do it a little bit differently than you used to. But yeah, definitely cooking that. I'm excited about that cooking seminar. And I'm hoping that I will be asked to go and help, because I geek out when I get in the kitchen. I really do. And those of us who really enjoy cooking, particularly blind cooks, we have different gadgets that we really like, you know, things that work for us. So yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Do we have any other questions? Thanks, Christy. Do we have other questions for Marja? We have a wonderful group. We've got quite a few, got a lot of people here, so. Get those hands up if you have questions.
Well, and I am more than happy to pass on the number for the office. So if anybody has questions about in-person events, and we do have people who come from all over the country who come for particularly the adventure retreats, the moderate and the high adventure retreat. If there are concerns about traveling, actually, because we have got sight loss instructor Todd and his friend who are traveling, he's coming from Montana, his friend's coming from Minnesota. One of our travel calls will be about travel to getting to Hall Park and what is it like to come up to an adventure retreat. We do have that call during the middle of the advanced sight loss. We may wait until August because I want people to hear about what is it like to get to the airport and have Hall come pick you up. Hall will come and pick you up from the airport. Hall will also come and pick you up from Amtrak, Union Station. I usually will take the train up to Portland, and it's great. I have a red cap who just usually zipped me on the little cart right out front, right to the van. So transportation always sounds scary, and honestly, transportation is one of the biggest anxiety producers for traveling, is, you know, going to something like Hall. And knowing that they will come and pick you up from the airport, they will come and pick you up from Amtrak, really helps to make it feel more doable. And I'm going to be very excited to have Todd and, his friend talk about what is it like to actually travel and come to the park for events. So I'm looking forward to it. It should be fun.
Well, go ahead and send me whatever you'd like me to post. I'll be happy to take it. I can take that number right now. If you want to go ahead and give it to us, I will send that out to the announce list right away, too.
Great. The office for Hall Park, the number is 503-668-6195.
Okay.
And then I will send you a schedule of the events through the end of the year. And that would include the office number as well. And
Perfect.
As I said, if you want to, the office is really good about helping you be creative in finding ways of being able to find sponsorship for being able to come to retreats. And boy, howdy, I think it's really worth it. I really do. Thank you for inviting me.
Absolutely. We want to thank you. This has been a pleasure and a treat, and we appreciate you so much. Thank you so much, Marja.
Thanks so much, everyone. Enjoy your convention.
Thank you, Marja.